Place, the home of the Montgomery County Historical Society. My name is Bob Wernley. I am a member of the Oral History Committee of the Society, and the fellow we're going to interview today is Fred Whittington, a longtime resident of Montgomery County who served in World War II. This is a part of a series of interviews that we're doing of men of this county who served in World War II. Men and women, I should say. These tapes, these oral history tapes that we're making, are one copy or two copies are going to be placed in the local history room at the Crawfordsville Public Library so that you can take them out and anybody can take them out, check them out like any library book. And we hope that they'll be there for a good many years to come. Fred, you understand that and you're willing to have that done. We hope you too, we can give you a copy of this tape for your family so that they can, they'll have a record of what you did in World War II. Now, Fred, let's get started here by asking you, where do you live, and give us your date of birth. And
I was born October 11th, 1918, just 30 days before the armistice and before World War I. I live at 14 Watson Drive, just outside the city limits of Crawfordsville.
And who were your parents?
My parents were Fred and Grace Whittington of Crawfordsville. I'm junior.
You're a junior. You're a little bit beyond that.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers and one sister. I have a brother in Wisconsin, Dick. He married Yvonne Shields, which is come from Montgomery County. Jack, my younger brother, lives in Crawfordsville. And my sister, Barbara, she married Ray Mackey, he retired from the service, 30-year veteran. And
that's, I take it that you went to school here?
Yes.
In Montgomery County, went to Crawfordsville High School. What class were you in?
Well, I've been class 36, but I got out before then. I shouldn't have, but I did. To work.
And where'd you go to work?
I went to work in the meat market here in Crawfordsville.
Whereabouts? Which meat market?
Well, it was the one they call Bailey's. It was in the old Gravit Hair Store down on Washington Street. Worked there for that when I was an apprentice, and after I learned the trade, I worked in different stores.
I take it along about this time, while the war clouds were gathering around, and you got your draft number.
Yes, I got the letter from the president saying, congratulations, you've been chosen, and here's your number. Really, I was ready to go at that time, and I went in the 7th of July, 1941. Inducted over Fort Benjamin Harrison.
7th of July in 41, so that was about 6 months, a little less than 6 months before, 5 months before the war started. At that time, you were up at an age where you could have been married, where you were.
No, I wasn't married, I was still single. I wanted to go. I wanted to get. See, they told us you'd only be going for a year. I thought, well, that's not bad. But it turned out that it was almost 4 years.
Yeah. Now, when you were, you say you were drafted and you went in July, you remember the fellows that you went with? You remember where did you report down here to Crawfordsville?
Well, we reported down here where the German review circulation offices. Now, that was drafted.
Over on Market Street?
Over on Market Street, yeah. And they had one of those old, big old buses that used to run through here. And I think we had a bus load, but the ones I remember are Barney Ray and Dale Canada and Jim Savins. I can't think of any more right now.
Any of those fellows around here now?
Dale Canada lives in New Ross, and Jim Savins lives in Crawfordsville. Barney Ray is retired from service, and he had a terrible stroke in 1975, but he still managed to get out. They lives here in Crawfordsville.
He lives in Crawfordsville?
Yes.
All right. Now, you reported to down here on Market Street. You drove over in a bus over to Fort Harrison. And where'd you get your physical exam?
I got mine in Terre Haute. Because I had, when I was young, I had tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
And when they found that out, they said, there's only two places in the district that you could get your physical. One was here and one was down in Terre Haute. Well, they sent me to Terre Haute to have it.
That was then before?
Before I was inducted.
And yet, even though you had tuberculosis, they took you.
Yes.
Well, now you must have had a. Did you go down there? How did you get down to Terre Haute?
On bus. We had a bus went down at that time.
They took you down,
did you? They sent us down in the bus, gave us a voucher for our noon meal, and then came back. There was somebody else that went with me, but I don't remember who that
was. Uh-huh. And did you. Was there a big fanfare in the newspaper when you left?
Oh yes. The newspaper was down there with their cameras and took pictures of us, and because we were the largest group to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Since the draft started there.
Were you the first group to leave, or just?
No, I don't think so. I think that there might have been twos and threes leave.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you had a chance to go into the National Guard too. At that time. And I chose to go to the draft, take my chances there.
And do you remember, did your mother and dad come down there to the...
My mother did, my dad did, and my uncle, Everett Paxton, came down there.
Everett Paxton?
Yes.
He was your uncle. And was it kind of a tearful farewell?
Not really. No, uh-huh. I was looking forward to it. I think my dad hated to see me, but, and mother too. But
I remember that myself because I was drafted.
Uh-huh.
And when we went down to the place where we were leaving, my mother and dad came down. Mm-hmm. I think my brother and sister. You got over to Fort Harrison. And what happened over there?
Well, we took our physicals, you know, and you go through the line, and each one has a little job that they perform. And we come in, then they took us, after our physical, we went to get our clothes to the quartermaster. And they just said, what size do you wear? You know, you wear this size. You ask what size shoe you wear. I said, well, I wear an 8.5. He said, no, you don't, you wear a 9. So I had two pair of 9, number. The shoes.
Those heavy brown shoes?
Yeah. And what size shirt? I said 15, 32. They said, no, you're not, you got 33. And they said, what size trousers? I said 32, 33. And they said, no, 33.
Did you get inoculations there?
Oh, yes. One on each side of you. You walk through and they hit you on each side.
Uh-huh.
And there's another story that when we get a little farther along.
Yeah. And what else happened there at the reception station over there?
Well, not much. We were inducted into the service. And we were given a certain, things that we had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding When you meet an officer, when you salute the officer, they told you how to do it. And just the basic things.
I called that the reception. That was really the induction.
Induction center.
Station. And where did you go from there?
I went from there down to Camp Lee, Virginia.
Were you all split up then?
Yes, we were. There was Barney Ray and I were together, and then we saw the first night we were there. We ran into some kid, he was walking down, had his head down, and kind of kicking the grass, a lot of the rocks along the way. And so we said, "Hey, boy, where are you from?" He says, "I'm from Terre, from Thorntown." We said, "Well, what's your name?" He said, "Bob McBain."
Bob who?
McBain.
Oh, okay.
And from that day on, we were the three together.
Oh.
And to this day, the three of us are still alive, and get together quite often.
Does Bob McBain still live up at Thorntown?
He's up at Thorntown. One time he had the Ford Tractor Agency at Lebanon. So he retired from that.
Now, Fort Lee, Virginia, what was that? Ordnance?
That was a
reception center.
No, that was a quartermaster school.
Oh, okay.
They had cooks and bakers and mechanics. And they sent me to mechanic school. And I was supposed to go to cook and baker school because I was a meat guy. You had to cut meat. But I got in the wrong group. I'm glad I did because I was with some of the people I liked.
Uh-huh. And, okay, you take your basic training. Where did you take your basic
training? That's where I took basic training. We go to school a half a day and then infantry training a half a day.
Now, you went directly from Harrison to
Camp Lee.
Well, now, you must have gone through a reception center somewhere along the line where they classified you.
Well, that was done at Fort Bend.
At Fort Bend, okay. You were interviewed at Fort Bend.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. And so that you went directly from Crawfordsville to Fort Bend.
Yes.
And there you were, they received you, interviewed you, and that's where you got your
physical
and everything else. Okay, and your basic training was taken at Fort Lee. And you remember how long was it? 13 weeks?
13 weeks, and I thought they were going to kill me.
Uh-huh.
But the mechanic school was fine, but boy, that infantry, that was pretty rough.
Uh-huh.
And it was hot. I remember the day we got there, they lined us up out in front of the barracks. Pretty soon I hear a guy fall over, another one fall over here. It was so hot and dry.
Uh-huh.
And we'd been on the train where it was kind of rather cool for couple of days.
Oh.
And we got down there and it was hot.
But you and who was the other fellow? Barney Ray went to Fort Lee, and then you. At Fort Lee, did you live in those brick barracks, or were you in the wooden barracks?
We were in the wooden barracks.
Uh-huh. What else do you remember about your basic?
Well, I remember the food. We had, seemed like we had eggplant for breakfast. We had it for lunch, and sometimes we had it for dinner. And then they had bread, which, oh, it was good. It was something these cooks and bakers, of course, they bake their own bread, and sometimes you get a loaf of bread about that big around, and sometimes you'd have one like that that were never uniform. But it was good.
Uh-huh.
It was real good. I had pretty good food all the time,
uh-huh.
Except one time.
When did it happen that you, was it right there that you got into ordnance?
Yeah, I know. See, the Army changed over from motor vehicles, went into ordnance.
From over from quartermaster
to ordnance. And having been trained in the quartermaster depot, I was transferred.
Yeah. And what did you do next after you completed your basic?
We went to, I forget, it was Alexander, Virginia, where we got off the train. And a convoy met us there and took us over to Camp Hope, Louisiana. And it was 37th Quartermaster. And I was with them for quite a while. That was up until the time they began to change over from quartermaster for vehicles over to ordnance. Now, why they did, I don't know, but that's the way they did. And I was in Camp Polk for
Camp Polk, Camp Louisiana.
Louisiana. And I was there for quite some time. Let's see. From October 41 to September, I think it was either the last of August or 1st of September 42.
Now, Fred, you were in ordnance working on vehicles. What kind of vehicles were you working on?
Trucks, mostly. That's what we repaired until I got into ordnance, and then I was in, well, I had quite a bit of experience working in the shop as a parts man. And they needed somebody in ordnance, and that's when they transferred me from, well, at that time, our company had left Polk and had gone to Camp Shelby, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And I got transferred back to Camp Polk. I had 1 hour to get my stuff ready to go overseas. Mm-hmm.
Were those the trucks you worked on, were those the old Studebakers?
We had some.
Mm-hmm. What were they? Studebakers and what else?
Studebaker, GMC, Dodge, mm-hmm. and some Ford, and then of course the Jeep.
Yeah. All right, you say then you got your, it was in the following year, about a year later, you got your orders to go overseas. Mm-hmm. You had had 1 hour to get packed.
1 hour. We got in, we were transferred from Shelby over to Polk, or back to Polk, and we had 1 hour to get our, separate our clothes.
Now when you speak of we, who was
it? Well, there was Kevin, more or less a cadre, that came from the third quartermaster over to...
Now was your buddy with you, or your two buddies?
No, I left them behind. I hated to. I left them behind, and then, well, there were, of course, I met other fellows.
Pardon?
I met other fellows, and,
yeah.
And we got along fine.
So that you really didn't stay with them for the rest
no,
of
No, I didn't stay with them. They all went different ways. The other two did. One went to OCS, and the other one was transferred to some other company.
Mm-hmm. All the while, were you a PFC or a private or what?
I was got up to T5.
Uh-huh.
I was corporal.
Yeah. Now, when you were transported around, you were on trains, were you, for the most part?
Yes.
You remember those troop trains?
Oh, yes, very well.
What do you remember about them?
Well, the food on them, one thing, the food was great. I don't know how those cooks managed to cook anything the way that train weaved back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the food was real good.
And when you were getting ready to ship out, where did you go?
I left from Chicago. We left Camp Polk and went to Chicago. And I remember standing guard out on flat cars where we had our truck and everything. And we went to Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Shipped out from there overseas.
Polk was in Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
You went to Chicago.
Yeah.
And then you went to Fort Dix.
Fort Dix.
And you boarded a ship at Fort Dix.
I think it was. No, we weren't boarded. They took us to New York. We boarded in the Navy Yard in New York.
Okay.
We were on a small ship, SS Cephalid.
What was the name of it?
Cephalid.
How do you spell it?
I don't know.
Cephalid?
Cephalid.
Cephalid.
It was a little small ship that we sailed the Caribbean. And they had room for just a few passengers. Fortunately, I was on the highway side, I got one of the rooms on ADAC. I thought I really had something, till we hit a storm. And that, and of course they changed directions every 6 minutes. So they couldn't be torpedoed. And one night we had this storm. It was so bad that they tied the guys in the gun turrets to them so they wouldn't fall anymore. And that ship rolled so much that it would roll over far enough to pick up water on ADAC and went right outside my door. And I didn't like that very well. That was, or it would be over on the North Atlantic in the fall of the year. That's a bad time to be in.
And so this would have been in October or?
Latter part of September. We were in, we left in New York and went to the Nova Scotia, and they, of course they closed the gates and we couldn't, we didn't get in there in time. So they, we had an anchor out and or just, I don't know what, how they did it. Anyhow, and I woke up the next morning, I got up and went out on the, to get a breath of fresh air. And I saw this purser run. And then I saw something coming across and looked kind of like something silver. I thought it might be a fish. So I just walked on up on the deck and watched it. And pretty soon I saw the purser. And I said, what in the world were you running from? He said, didn't you see what come across the, was in the water? I said, yeah. He said, do you know what it was? I said, no. He said, it was a torpedo. This German U-boat had laid off, or sat there all night till the morning, and then they took a, took two shots at it. They shot one torpedo across the bow of the boat and one across the aft.
Mm-hmm. Neither one of them hit.
Neither one of them hit the thing. Lord.
They opened up, then you were anchored off the gates to the harbor. Mm-hmm. They opened them up in the morning, you went in.
Went in, and we were.
Was this at Halifax?
Yes, Halifax, Nova Scotia. And we went in for, we were there for 7 days, and we practiced, going over the side on Jacob's, what we call Jacob's Ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, we got in the boats and rode around the bay there and come back up. Really, it was good training in case we ever had, if we had it.
Did you get to go ashore?
No, they wouldn't let us.
Uh-huh.
The Navy personnel got to go ashore, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm. How many people, how many of you were on that? Or how many Army people were you on that ship, remember?
Let's see, 141 enlisted people and seven or six officers.
Mm-hmm. Had you by that time been assigned to a unit?
Yes, I was with the 78th Ordnance Depot Company.
Okay, now what do you remember about, I take it after the end of the 7 days, while you're ready to take off and
yeah.
Join another convoy?
Yeah, missed one convoy, and then the week later we picked up this other one. And it was an 8-knot convoy, which is very slow. And we ran into some bad weather, like I said a while ago. And we had a tanker off on this side of us, and that didn't suit me too well. Mm-hmm. But we let out a, I don't know what it's called, it was something that they put in water that caused a kind of a rooster tail, like on a outboard motor.
Uh-huh.
Water goes up in the air. And that's what they guided us. They guided off us, we guided off of the ship in front of us. Mm-hmm. And then we had the Canadian ships were alongside of the escorting us. And this, every once in a while you see these little corvettes, they just take off, go out through there, and pretty soon they come back in a convoy. And as far as I know, we only had one really in alert, and that was when we were up almost to England. And there was depth charges, we could hear the depth charges going off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they got the Seven, right.
How long were you on board ship from the time you left Halifax?
Let's see, was it 21 days.
Now, you had a cabin. You were pretty excluded. Most of the fellas slept in hammocks, didn't they?
Well, yeah, and I was fortunate. And another thing, they sent me down to the kitchen to help cook. Well, I got down there, and this fellow was Portuguese, and I couldn't understand what he was saying, and he couldn't understand what I was saying. And he was cleaning fish heads. I said, what are you going to do? I finally got across to him, and he says, going to have soup, soup. And I said, oh, no, that's enough for me. And they sent two of us down there. We turned around and left and said, no, we're going to do that. But later on, I found out a pretty good deal with
that. Uh-huh.
To help him out down the kitchen.
You mean KP?
Yeah, well, not KP necessarily. We need to be prepared food.
Uh-huh. So that then you, did you have some rough weather going over?
Oh, terrible. It was terrible. Some of it was. And then when we got into, started going down to Firth of Clyde, I said, who in the world is Clyde? I'd never heard of Firth of Clyde before. And I finally found out it was just the name of the river. And we went down and docked. We had the British came aboard. Of course, they had to count everybody who was there. Cost the United States government so much for each person who was went ashore. So after they got that done, they loaded us on a train and sent us down to the southern part of England.
I don't understand when you say it cost the United States so much for everybody that landed?
Everybody that
landed. How did you know that?
Well, they came aboard, and one of the fellows was asking what they were doing. And they said they had came aboard to find out how many people were there, and how many people would be on the English soil. I don't understand it, but that's the way it worked.
Now, you were put ashore there, and you got on a train then, did you?
Yeah, one of those English trains. We went through Bristol, I know, on the way down to the southern part of England, southeast. And they had an air raid there the night before. And the glass, they had a lot of glass in the station. And there was glass everywhere. And we didn't even stop, we just
went through Bristol, right? Yeah, so. And what was your destination?
Down around the cliffs of Dover.
Oh.
Or just a few miles from there.
From near Dover?
Yeah, so. And then we stayed there for, I think a couple of weeks. And believe it or not, wigwams.
Wigwams?
Yeah. Like the Indians had. And they were made out of canvas. And you slept with your head out toward the end of the tent. And your feet toward the middle. And everybody had that way you'd have enough room for your barracks bag. Mm-hmm.
Now, were you, were the Americans cooking their own food, or were you, by that time, had the British taken over and running the mess halls?
No, we had our own cooks.
You did?
And we did, mm-hmm. they did a fantastic job with what they had worked with. And from there we went on up to Ash Church, which is right outside.
Ash Church?
Yeah. Just outside of Gloucester, in Gloucestershire. And we had, there was a depot there, and we they issued us our trucks, and they were semis. And we built shelves in there for the different parts we would be carrying.
Parts?
Yeah, parts for automobiles, for our trucks.
Okay.
And then we, of course, we had guns and half tracks and tanks, and we had to take parts for those. And we loaded up what we needed, and then on the 10th of November, we set sail for North Africa. It was a rather peaceful. We had 65 ships and they were all carried personnel.
Again, in a convoy.
As we came through the Straits of Gibraltar, I was standing on the deck and I looked out and here came a sub up out of the water. Oh my land. And of course it was one of ours that we didn't need to worry about. But that was something to see. Mm-hmm.
That was the only sub you saw?
That's the only sub I saw until I got out of service.
Okay. Going through the Straits of Gibraltar, tell us what that was like.
Well, we didn't see, we could see land, but that's about all.
Uh-huh.
But I was surprised at how calm it was after from coming from the Atlantic into the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm.
We went just a short distance there. We went into Oran, North Africa.
That's in Algiers.
Algiers.
What kind of a ship, or were you on from England to?
I was on the Mariposa. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, that was a passenger.
Yeah, that's the one we went.
Big passenger.
Yes.
Ship.
California.
How many people were aboard that?
I don't know. There was.
That was a large ship.
A large ship, and it carried quite a few. Mm. And that's where I volunteered to work in the kitchen there. So I went one night. After we got through, why we'd cook us another meal. So I had four meals a day. And this one guy said, that's in charge. He said to me, he said, get us some meat out so we'll cook some meat for supper, for the lunch we have about midnight. I said, all right. So I went in the cooler, and there was a short loin in there. That's where the T-bones are. I cut that thing up, and about the time I cut the last steak off, when he come down, and he says, what'd you do? He says, that's for the officers.
Oh.
I said, no. Not tonight. We're going to have those tonight. So we had, that was one of the fun things that happened. But you had to have some fun things to happen with it. Why are you going?
Yeah.
Going to the wall.
I think we all had that.
Yeah.
Now you've got, you went ashore then at Iran. Mm-hmm. And what happened at Iran?
Well, we finished, we got all of our trucks and everything together. When we got everything ready to go, which took about, well, I expect 3 weeks from the time we got our trucks, they came on a different ship than we did. And when we got our trucks and everything, and they got the parts in where they were supposed to go, we took off for Tunisia, just inside the Tunisian border.
Now what time is this? What's the date?
Let's see right there. It's November the 10th we left. And we got there about the 15th. And I expected around Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving we were out.
That would have been in 1942.
Thanksgiving of 42. We were in and had our depot set up. And
by this time you'd heard of Rommel, I suppose.
Oh yes. One of the finest generals there's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him, on our side with George Patton.
Yeah.
George Patton was the commander at one time down in North Africa.
Now do you remember some of those officers, some of those generals?
Oh yeah.
Remember Patton then, obviously?
Oh yes, you definitely know Patton. Patton's headquarters at one time was right down the road from our depot. And when he came by, you'd better have your helmet off and you'd better have either a sidearm or a rifle. And you'd better give him a high salute or he'd come back and tell you about it.
Mm-hmm.
One of our fellows one time was riding a courier, and he left his helmet off. He just had the under part of the helmet on, you know.
The liner.
And Batman stopped his car and turned around and took off after him. And when he caught up, the guy said, I've had some people get on me and eat me up. He said, nothing like that guy did. He won battles. A lot of them called him blood and guts, his guts and your blood, but he won battles. I think he was a great general. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember any of the other generals down there?
I see Friedendahl was down there.
Friedendahl?
Uh-huh. And, I forget that. What's his name? It started with a B. What was that? But they were...
Bradley.
Yeah, that was...
Now, okay, you got all your equipment there, you got your truck and everything, and what did you do then?
Well, we left Oran, a little town right outside of Oran. And we'd been there about 3 weeks, and of course we were all greenhorns, and one night they had an air raid. And one single plane came over, and all of us got out, we just looking around to see. That's the first time we ever did anything like that. So we went on to load our trucks up, and we went on to Tunisia, just inside the border. There was no town. We were just out in the middle, just right across the border from Algeria into Tunisia. And we were there. In 48 hours, we had to go back. I was sent back to Oran to order more parts. They cleaned us out, but there was no orders up there. No parts or parts depot at all. And when we come up there, they took everything we had, about everything we had. Some of the stuff we had to put together in order for them to have, like the front wheel drive on a truck. And we had to put that, I put several of those together, so they could go ahead and run the truck.
Now, are you telling me that the first airplane you saw was down there in Tunisia or Algeria?
Uh-huh.
There haven't been any air raids in England? Or?
Not where I was.
Even down on the, when you were out in the Atlantic Ocean, you saw no airplanes. What about the American and the Allied Air Force?
Well, we've seen some of those, but nothing. And of course, after we had to pull back for some reason. I don't know why. We had to go on south to, Ambia, I think was the name of it now.
What was the name of it?
Ambia.
Ambia?
Ambia.
Okay.
And it was just a small Arabic town. No French were in there. And we were about 5 miles out. Then we begin to see more aircraft going over.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, whenever we moved a little farther by, they began to bomb the Palestine oil fields. And I've seen thousands of planes at a time go over the bomb.
You mean Allied planes?
Allied planes, yes.
Did you see any of the German planes or the Italian planes?
I never saw an Italian plane. I've seen some German planes. Our company waterproofed the invasion for Sicily. That came along in the 40s, 1943, and we inspected and waterproofed all the vehicles that went into Sicily invasion.
Now, the Italians were still in the fighting at that time.
Well, they put the Germans were back here, they put the Italians in front of them and said, you're either going to fight the Americans or you're going to fight, you're going to shoot you. And that's actually what they said. And of course, they'd give up. If any chance at all, they surrender.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the barbed wire fences up where they just had I don't know how they slept, I don't know how they fed all those people.
Well, the Italians that were captured, you
know? Italians captured, the Germans that were captured. They'd haul them back as fast as they could. The quartermaster would haul supplies up and take a load of prisoners back.
Oh.
And I seen, like one guy says, yeah, since you're going to be over here, I'm going to be over in the United States and I'll hear about the World Series. I'm old, he's son of a gun.
You mean this was a German?
German, uh-huh. He can speak English. We had a bunch of, a group of cooks that were, that did an excellent job. We were on British rations for a while. We had hairless oxtail stew, steak and kidney pudding, rice and raisins, tea, heart attack. Man, that was terrible. So I told this one lieutenant, I said, do you care if I go fishing and get some fish, cook them? He says, no, go ahead. So I went, I got one of the fellows to go with me. And I took some concussion grenades. The first one he put, we threw in, why, there were just four or five fixtures, belly up. Threw in another one, and boy, they were just, they just come up from everywhere. So this fellow went in with me, he can swim, I can't swim. He went out there and he says, I thought they were just a little small fish, and they were about like that. And we took off our undershirts and filled our undershirts with fish. And we went back up to the company area. This lieutenant says, what'd you get? And I said, should we show him? I started, he said, go up and get what you need to cook them in, because we can't cook them with mess hall because it hasn't been inspected. So I went and got the, well, I told the mess hall, the sergeant, what I was going to do, what I needed, and he says, here, take this, and he said, I'm going down cooking for you. So we fed about half the company that night on the fish.
Now where would you have a lake where you could catch
fish? This is the Mediterranean Sea.
In the Mediterranean?
Yeah, we were only about a mile from the Mediterranean. This one, we were bivouacked in a cork grove.
Cork?
Like in champagne bottles, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I thought that they just, I didn't know how they did it. That cork grove's about that thick on that tree, and they'll peel that off. And then they'll make cork out of it, and in a few years it grows back and they do it again.
Now are you in Tunisia now and this is happening?
No, we're still in Algiers.
Mm-hmm. And, well now I take it that you started moving forward though, moving east.
Yes.
Was Ramos Theron still in charge?
Oh yes, very much in charge. We were in Tunisia when he broke through Kasserine Pass. You remember that. And in the Kasserine Pass, we thought we had that, was safe. In fact, our depot was only about 2 miles from the Kasserine Pass.
Mm-hmm.
And we took it easy. We had our guards out. We were about a quarter of a mile from the highway. And one this morning, a sergeant got out there and blowing that whistle, and I said, what's the matter with me? I looked at my watch, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. And the second time he blew the whistle, I thought, well, we better get out there, something wrong. So they assembled and they said that we got to move back, that the Germans broke through at Kasserine Pass. And we started loading up and getting our stuff ready. I worked for 72 hours straight driving a truck to hauling ordnance material out of the depot that we have.
Trying to save the ordnance.
Save everything we could.
Mm-hmm.
And but the Air Force come to rescue and they dropped incendiary bombs and gasoline and that put a stop to him. He went right on, anyhow, he went right on, went out to the peninsula, Tunisian peninsula.
He got through.
Oh yeah. He was a wonderful general. That might be nice to say about an enemy, but he was smart. Mm-hmm. He knew what he was doing.
Now, the attack, I didn't quite understand this. You said they put the Italians out the front?
Uh-huh.
Now, when they broke through Catherine Pass with the Italians?
I don't think there was any, they had any Italians in.
Uh-huh.
There was, because he would, I don't think he'd take a chance with something like that, as important as that was when they came through that pass.
Mm-hmm.
Later, after it was over, I'd gone through down there and gone through there. I don't know how in the world they got all this their equipment through like they did.
Mm-hmm.
It was right on the edge of the Sierra Desert.
Uh-huh. All right, now what's our time here? Where are we?
Well, let's see. I had to be in May or June, and I'm not sure. But,
in other words, you'd gone through the winter.
Uh-huh.
What about the winter? How was the winter out there on the desert?
Well, we weren't on the desert. We were on a high plateau all the time we were in there. And of course, Catherine was on the desert. And it was warm down there. But up where we were at, up on the plateau, we had snow. And I told people that, and they say, yeah, North Africa, in Africa, you had snow. I mean, you sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I often do decide. But,
the Atlas Mountains, is that what those?
I don't know what they were.
Oh, okay. I don't know enough about the Atlas
Mountains. I never thought to look.
But they were up high, and
we were up high.
Did you have warm-up clothing? That,
well, yes, we had clothing to keep you warm, but that was there for a while. It was pretty rough. You ate outside in the cold, and you slept outside in the cold, and you weren't warm any night.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went to bed, cold, and when you woke up, you got up cold.
When Rommel broke through the Catherine Pass, what did your outfit do?
We pulled back, I expect 20 miles, and waited, and then we moved on up toward Missouri. After that.
Missouri.
Yeah. Okay. Ernie Pyle was really in our area at one time. We were there.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. Felton. Dana.
Was it at that time?
Yeah. Just before Catherine Pass.
Ernie Pyle was there.
Yeah.
Did you ever see him?
Oh, yeah. I saw him. Talked to him a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Real nice fellow to talk to. Always thought a lot of him.
Uh-huh.
Enjoyed his column in the paper.
Why don't we take a little break here? We've been talking for about an hour. Here we are back again. Oh, during this pause, I forgot to mention when we introduced this thing, our camel work today is being done by Mike Hall. You met Mike, who is our executive director here at Lane Place. And Mike has done a lot of these tapes, and he's heard a lot of interesting stories. Fred, during the recess here, you mentioned about this fellow that had such a time with getting a shot. Tell us about that story.
Well, he was a young man, and he was not really this slim built like I was. And he came around, and he says to these six fellows, he says, "Will you fellas hold me down while they give me my shot?" He said, "If you don't, I'm going to jump overboard." He says, "I'm just scared to death to have a shot."
Was this on board ship
going to England.
And then you really did that?
Yeah, there were six of us held him down. And I do believe that he would have jumped overboard.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, they didn't stop to pick you up. You're grown again.
Okay. I think that when we stopped, where were we?
Well, I think we were up in Tunisia someplace around just short ways from Missouri.
Uh-huh.
we had, we moved our depot up there, and at that time, that was after the Germans had evacuated and left. We had...
They had gone, they had retreated.
They retreated. They had gone out north, out through Tunisia.
Oh.
And, or not, yeah, Tunisia. And they brought our, when they gathered up all the ordnance material, they brought it to our depot. And we had a pile of rifles and these stem guns that they had.
You mean the Germans?
The Germans, when after they left. See, they left their guns and everything.
And you had all that?
They gathered it up and brought it into us. And
well,
we had,
what would you do with that?
It was, last I seen it was still piled up out there in a big pile. It was piled up, oh, about twice as big as these two rooms, and just as high, maybe a little higher.
But Germany,
German
ordnance equipment.
And they had, we got some of the trucks. We got Rommel's command car. Had that to run around in for a while until one of the generals wondered. We had to use that. And they had their mess car or trucks.
Were you able to use their trucks?
No, we didn't. Well, we used some of them. We had one of these. You know, have you seen these? I think they got about 8 wheels on each side. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a command car where they carried probably a company at a time, because you set 4 abreast in that. Mm-hmm. We had one of those, and we had a lot of fun with that. We had a motorcycle. I rode that motorcycle. That's the only one I ever rode. I was scared of it. I'm scared of any of that motorcycle. But that was a nice piece of equipment. And their diesels were far superior to anything you had.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-aircraft and the artillery gun that they had was a German 88.
German 88, huh?
And it would traverse straight out.
Mm-hmm.
And they could use for anti-aircraft or artillery, either one. It was a good piece of equipment. We had some of those. And, of course, some of us would go down, we went down and we got into the mess car, the mess trucks that they had. Well, they had black bread in there, and they had cheese, and dill pickles, and the cheese was great, and the dill pickles were good, but I couldn't say too much for the bread, I know that. They were our own. One time we were in North Africa, we could smell a bakery someplace. And the master sergeant came to me and said, "Let's go find that bakery." I said, "All right, let's." And so we jumped the jeep. And we drove about 5 miles just by following our nose. And we found that bakery. And a nice bunch of guys. It's the first time we'd had any baked goods, you know, bread like we use,
mm-hmm.
for about 3 months. And they gave us bread right off the hot out of the oven. They brought us a pound of butter, brought us a blackberry cobbler to eat. I said, "What can we do for you guys?" But then they start supplying bread for the
mm-hmm.
people there.
That was a... Did you ever encounter any Germans or any Italians in your, other than prisoners, did you ever get close enough to see any of them?
No, I've seen some dead ones, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a dead German lady, that she's parachuted in and behind the lines, and when she's coming down, somebody shot her right through the head.
Mm-hmm.
That was down at the graves.
Well, German? Lady parachuting into behind the lines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was the occasion for that?
Well, she was back there as a prostitute to get information.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're at Bizerte, and what What did you do next?
Well, we had a big air raid there one night, and it was on the 7th of July, I believe, 6th or 7th of July. And I saw 5 German planes shot down. Ariane aircraft was out for the searchlights. Of course, they had searchlights, and yeah. We didn't, they're out of style now. And when they get one of those planes and they cross, he was gone. I seen him. There was one that went right over our head and went and crashed out in the desert. And the funny thing happened, we had a French coastal gun right behind us, and the Frenchman manning it. And during this air raid, while they got out there, and we were standing right underneath, they were up on the hill, and they fired that French 75. I don't know what they were firing at, but they couldn't be an airplane because it wouldn't go up high enough to shoot an airplane. But it was fun. It was an experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let's move on. Where are we going from here?
Okay, we went from North Africa to Sicily. We landed in Palermo.
How'd you get across the straits there?
We went on LSD, That's the front end down, so we got a flat bottom.
Yeah.
And everybody was sick on the ship, and I laid down beside the mess truck there on the deck. Pretty soon the mess truck broke loose, and I got left there, got the guy to tie it down again. And we went on LST, landed in Palermo, and then we went from there.
You landed at Palermo? Where did you take off from Tunisia?
Well, off of Lake Bizerte.
Lake Bizerte. Okay. And you landed at Palermo, and what was Palermo had already been occupied by the Allies?
Yeah, they'd already been through there, and I don't think we'd been there for 2 or 3 days, and they sent a few of us down to Lakata, which was one of the beaches where they came in to Salerno, Sicily. And we cleaned up down there, the ordnance material, and came back up to Palermo, and about that time they moved us on out to up here in Marseille,